But it's a particular pleasure to welcome Mike Gilson, who is editor of the Belfast Telegraph.
Thank you very much. I should say it's 70 people, all good news agents. I just wondered whether, listening to Declan there, whether there's an interesting thing about modern newspapers actually in today's edition. Here's a wrap, which the editorial team did about the need to support the city tomorrow on what is the biggest trading day of the year, as the fears around the protests and dissidents grow. There's a case of journalism getting off the fence, you might argue. And also on the front of the real paper, is it vindictive to want justice for your family? This is the story of Sinn Féin describing the prosecution of the murder of John Proctor as vindictive. And so still the tentacles of the past come up onto the front page every day. I don't know if what I'm going to say is any relevance. I've tried to keep to what brief I was given. So there's just a few jottings of my own experience in journalism. Very limited. Certainly nothing like the previous speaker, so you'll forgive me if there is some sort of more generalisations in what I say. And these are just a few jottings and a few thoughts. I suppose I'll start with really a bit about what the modern Belfast Telegraph is, if you'll indulge me for a second. It's an ABC audited figure of 47,000 a day, a readership, audited readership figure of 166,000 a day. And when you combine our website, which at the moment is hitting about 1.8 million uniques a month, it gives us an audited readership figure of 470,000 people that are coming to us at least once a week. So actually, when you look at audience, let's forget the terrible thing of money for a minute. Actually, our audience is as big as it's ever been, and which is really quite remarkable when you think of the sales, the copy sales we were shifting back in the Troubles. Our readership is 50% of our readership is in the ABC1 social class, 36% of those in the AB section, if you still believe those definitions. Almost one in three defines themselves as of Catholic background, and the average age in the paper is about 51, a hell of a lot younger online. And we have a mainly urban readership, with strength being the Greater Belfast area. You probably know most of that anyway. So you can see that the Belfast Telegraph has an interesting position in the market. It's not an easy one. It's very difficult. I've edited a lot of different newspapers around the UK, and this is probably the hardest one. We're from a position where we were perhaps stereotyped, I guess, back in the days of the paper for the middle class, liberalish Protestant Belfast managing class on the way home. We've developed and we've had to change. I don't think it was ever as simple as that. I think that during the Troubles, people came to us because it was recognised that for the large part, we resisted taking what we call an angle, for the large part. And in recent years, we've moved to be what I would say is a forward-looking newspaper. Very hard to describe what that might be. Not forgetting the past, of course, or not failing to highlight how its tentacles reach always into the present and the future, as you can see from today's paper. And I think always at the back of that, you're driven by your knowledge as much as you can. We've got much cleverer at this and understand it. And sometimes our punts are where we think our readers are. As you can tell, I'm not from here. I've been here for only 4 years. I'm not an expert on the past in this part of the world. I'm a journalist. I love newspapers. It's in my blood. I'm passionate about bringing together packages of information and making them compelling for readers, both online and in paper. But I also believe in campaigning. I believe that newspapers, as we talked about before, do have a role now in being informing opinions. Newspapers are changing. Someone mentioned there about the change away from hard facts into opinions. And a lot of that is changing. The structure of media is how it's changing. You could argue there's lots of opinions within the first two pages of today's paper. I think sometimes an outsider's constant why questions can challenge a truth that maybe those who have been here longer have taken for granted. And I certainly find that in my conference every day when I keep saying, but why? But why? And when you get to that process, you get to some kind of element of truth, or at least a debate. A newspaper, be it inky or online, stands by the values it develops, as I say, in conjunction with its readers. Our quality of life, our aspirations, and the way structures that govern those outcomes operate is food and drink to us. Our readers tend not to be people on the edges. They are not the loudest shouters, shall we say. And on the whole, they would rather look to the future. And how do we know this? We regularly focus group and survey most of our readers, and we regularly put the newspaper out to them and see what they send back. It's a terrible thing for a journalist, by the way. Even the Irish Times, dare I suggest, if you send out papers and you ask them to mark them up with a marker pen, what they've actually read in an average week, and you see how far down a story they go. That's a really scary thing for all you people who write 10,000 word dissertations, I can tell you, because if they get past the eighth part, you're doing very, very well indeed. So we understand that. And we're not naive, I think. I don't think we're in the neighbourhood tour. We clearly recognise that division is still deep, and that for every flag protester, there are the middle classes who may profess their indifference to the issues, but largely stick in marriage and social circles, very much on a defined path. A journalist in Northern Ireland has to be a very skillful navigator in these choppy waters indeed. And I think one of the things about Northern Irish newspapers and the newspaper industry and the media industry here is that it can be seen to serve and perpetuate the divide. I mean, we have newspapers here who are targeted to the nth degree to the sections of the their community. It is not for me to say, but some have argued that there is, of course, the risk that as well as celebrating the history and aspirations of these communities, there could also be a tendency to play in fields, to make the dangers and threats of the other side that little more real, to entrench positions so that journalism feels superficially vital to that community. It could be argued, for instance, that it was mentioned before, that maybe far too much space has been given to certain loyalist flag spokesmen, way beyond their support and certainly perhaps beyond the strength of their argument. It may be posited that there is a tendency to build bogeymen from the other side to position that sort of journalism as a defender against the bogeymen. But perhaps also, is it not also to say, look what an idiot the other side are as well, and the superiority of our position? I don't know. It's a position that you hear discussed in journalism circles. It's not about getting the Belfast Telegraph complaint for the reasons I've talked about with the readership before, nor would we ever want to. But I think you can understand that as something comes from the last paper I was up as a Scotsman, which was there's a lot of fairly contentious issues there, as you can imagine, but none as contentious as we find here. I suppose it feeds a little bit into what John was writing about in his article on peace journalism, which I read and tried to formulate a few sort of random, incoherent thoughts on my way here. I would agree with the Declan as well. I think peace journalism should be banished only to the halls of academia and never to be thought of and never be spoken again within newsrooms, ever. I don't recognise the word, and I've only ever thought of journalism. Peace journalism, as I say, is something that it might be worth talking about, but it certainly isn't anything I ever hear anything being talked about in my newsroom. For me, it is first and foremost, it has to be about the professional rigour. How does the story stand up, as we heard before? Does it fit the normal definitions of news that someone somewhere would rather you didn't run? I couldn't ever think of a case, for instance, where we wouldn't look at a story because of the need to recognise how far we've come. I mean, the recent stories that you see about Gerry Adams and his brother and the disappeared, superbly written by Suzanne Breen in our paper, would sort of prove that course. There's a story, an inconsistency to expose, and a journalist is off on the track, and always will be. The problem with the look how far we've come school, which we get quite a lot, I have to say, I mean, I get that regularly from politicians, is that it blinds you to how far we still have to go. And as I said before, we're often told that our harping on about how we are governed, which is a central theme, I think, for the Belfast Telegraph now, coming up from where we think our readers are, neglects the path we have travelled. But frankly, you know, people are really tired of that. They're tired of that the discussion. They're grateful for it, but they're tired of being constantly reminded of how grateful it should be. The torpor and dysfunction of what passes for some of our governance can never be ignored or softened because it's better than we had. Nor, frankly, can the dark ages approach the release of information in this country, or even the refusal to join the rest of the UK and lifting the yoke of medieval defamation laws be excused thus. In a small country where patronage is still rife, and we are constantly urged, as Mr. Robinson did only this week, to stop carping, a rumbustuous, pomposity-pricking, sometimes troublemaking press is more vital than ever. And by the way, social media cannot fill that gap. The trained and funded journalism has to fill on the subject, but I feel we might be here for a whole day if we got back onto that subject, so perhaps we should ignore it. Just one quick thought on the dangers of taking too close a role in the advancement of a society. I've heard it argued that, I mean, we talked about journalists against the peace there, but I've heard it argued the other way, and I don't know this, you guys would know better than me, that so ready were the media to cheerlead and play their grand roles in the peace process, to place their own hands of history on our shoulders, give people what they thought they wanted, that there was occasional abandonment of rigour, that stored up problems that were not debated at the time. Issues like pre-98 sentencing, for example, that emerged organically after to almost scupper progress down the road. I'd say I don't know if I wasn't there, but I would say it would have to take nerves of steel for a journalist or an editor to even swim a couple of strokes against the tide back in those days. So I don't know. I mean, I wasn't here. But an editor does have choices to make, no question about that. As we say, the nature of news is changing. If your newspaper is willing to take sides on different issues, and I think there's a difference here, on different issues rather than permanently tribal, it has to back it up with good journalism. And it also has to be ready to support people with vision. I think there is something in that. Those prepared to put their head above the parapet, there aren't many in this country. I've lost count of the amount of people who say things to me, and then I say, Jesus, that would be a great debate. Let's get that started. Are you joking? You know, we shouldn't cut their heads off when they do put their heads above the parapet, which is something that journalists sometimes take great pleasure in doing. So there is something that we can do in that, and there are decisions that we have to make. And I guess it's what we mean by making decisions in a post-conflict society. But I've edited newspapers, I think I've got some sort of staggering news for you. I've edited newspapers in all four countries of the UK, and I can tell you actually we're not that different in society. We keep pretending we are, but we're not. Those decisions about objectivity versus responsibility have been made across the world forever and a day. We're no different. We're nothing, you know, it's just not different. Although maybe back in the past the potential for the import of it has changed. But I think if we stop thinking differently, that would be a start. I don't know. I think we have to dismiss the whataboutery, obviously. It's boring, the orange-green ping-pong match. It's too easy. It's too easy copy. John mentioned something I've heard before, in his piece about shock job journalism. I don't quite know who he had in mind there, but a couple of names, maybe, I don't know. And there are talk shows designed to shed a little light with type of Punch and Judy show. But they exist everywhere. And to the most part, most people, I think one of the things that we miss about this is the audience. You know, the audience are much more intelligent than we give credit for. You know, I don't think audiences going to these talk shows really expect anything other than a bun fight. They certainly don't expect us to come to some conclusion other than he said, they said. And whether it really has that much import on the wider issues of working towards peace, I'm not so sure. And there are old hacks still reliving the war. I mean, of course there are. I mean, there are people, if I had a pound for everyone who told me about the time they went back in an IRA car with a hood over the thing to get a press conference, you know, I probably wouldn't need to work. It would be, you hear it about. But I think one of the things that is also worth noting is professional journalists now, certainly in my newsroom, are far too young to remember any of this. In fact, they don't really care that much about it. Here's an interesting thing, because they've got other preoccupations. They're reflecting the society that's moving on. And that's a really good thing. The old guard is, though, is necessary. I see my old friend Malachi here, so I'll give him a check as the old guard. Because you know, players from the past inevitably attempt their rewrites of history. All of them do. And the I Was There Brigade are vital in this instance, so that we can contest these new histories that are being written all the time. And actually, those kinds of journalists that were around at the time, providing you don't stand in a pint in the bar and have to listen to it, actually in the journalism themselves, are vital in what we do. Liam Clark, Malachi, Eamon Bally, someone mentioned before, all those guys are really important. Mark Simpson somewhere around here as well.
Taking notes.
Thank you very much. But at the back of it, when I edit my paper every day, there's a silent majority who, when I say they're no longer interested in that, of course they are, but there's a sizable proportion of our people who are not interested in black and white photo journalism anymore, with sideburns and dodgy haircuts. And you can almost see it when you do, again, I wouldn't want you to think I'm too research-based, not Philip Gould or New Labour here, but when you do research and you show pictures from the past and show these sort of things, you can see that the light's switching out all over town. You really can. I mean, it really is a case that people just don't always want that sort of stuff. And they do want to talk about new things. And they do want to talk about quality of life. That's the interesting thing, because that's where it comes back into. If you look at the maze, you look at Girdwood, you look at marching, you look at commemorations, actually new ways of dealing with those things and understanding why Girdwood is happening, understanding why we're getting yet another leisure centre at Girdwood but no housing. You know, it's really quite an important job of modern journalism to function, referring to the past but also taking it forward into the future. And we want to know why our waiting lists are so long, why our law is out of step with the rest of the UK. The trouble with that journalism now is it's harder to write for because people are less motivated to read it. They're not interested in defence, and they're not interested in having their prejudice confirmed by journalists. you know, it's quite easy for some newspapers to write to a very small portion of people and constantly confirm that prejudice. That's really quite easy journalism. You can go on at lunchtime for that stuff. So, look, that's a fairly incoherent sort of few thoughts of having been here for 4 years. I think that what I would say, really respectfully, ask you to ditch the term peace journalism. Let's bury it here today. And just stick to the roots of good old-fashioned, robust, half-lambasting, half-celebrating, sometimes scurrilous, sometimes serious journalism, and we won't go far wrong. It's the biggest tribute to some kind of normalisation I think we can have here. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Okay, yeah.